I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about diversity in the workplace. We're going to talk about what efforts are working in Central Indiana and what we need to make to make things better. My guests are Izelle Mars from the Diversity Roundtable, Patsy Hoyer from the League of Women Voters, and Dan Ward, Intake Coordinator for Indiana Disability Rights. Please join the conversation. You can call us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today about the issue of diversity in the workplace. We're going to talk about what efforts are having some success here in Indianapolis and Central Indiana, and where work still needs to be done. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests today are Izelle Mars from the Diversity Roundtable, Patsy Hoyer from the League of Women Voters, and Dan Ward, Intake Coordinator for Indiana Disability Rights. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Hello.
It's good to have you here. So we probably ought to start, and I like to start, when we're talking about big subjects like this, I think it's important to kind of talk about, establish a baseline so that people understand what we're talking about. I'm going to give everybody a chance to weigh in on this, but when we talk about diversity, what are we talking about here? What do we mean by that? Because it's one of those terms, particularly when you get you're dealing with folks who are critical of the concept or the process, you realize very quickly it means something very different to them than it means to the people who are advocates for it. Dan, I'll start with you.
Well, I think when we discuss diversity, we're talking about hiring people of all walks, whether it be people with disabilities or ethnicities, just across the board.
Izelle.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would say broadly the concept of diversity just speaks to working and living with people that are different from yourself. 20 years ago when our organization was founded in corporate America, that largely meant black, white, male, female. But now it's just so much broader in terms of the impacts of diversity. But
Patsy.
I agree that diversity is a really broad concept. It's really what's different. And there are visible differences like race or some disabilities. Others are not visible at all. LGBT, you can't tell by looking. We look at diversity in age. We look in certainly religions. So there are whole variety where we need to be looking and say, oh, well, that's different from me. The other thing I think we fall into is when we talk about diversity, people are not diverse. People are unique. Communities or groups are diverse, and that's what we're looking for.
So, Patsy, this process has been a long one. I mean, I remember, I'm going to date myself here. They get upset at times with me when I reveal that I'm not quite as young as Springtime on the air. But I remember going through diversity training in a corporate setting for the first time, probably 30 years ago. And, many of the issues that we were talking about then, we are still talking about today. Have we made progress? And again, I want to get everyone's thoughts on that, and if so, in what areas have we made progress? I'll start with Patsy, but I'm going to take it back around the horn.
Well, in terms of diversity in communities, yes, there's been progress here and there. Women are allowed to be in men's clubs. Some of these things have been litigated. Some have just seen the changing winds. neighborhoods are much more diverse, or people self-select into groups, which sometimes is a very... So diversity can be quite subtle, and inclusion can be very nuanced about why it's happening. I think the other thing is people tend to do what's comfortable. They have habits of behaviors and ways of thinking and processes, and inertia sort of prevails in terms of, are we looking at things differently? I think people are, corporations are, some of that's from litigation or fears of that. That's a good thing. But in terms of individuals, and certainly on religion, and I would be careful but saying politics, it's tricky.
Giselle.
I would agree that we've made some progress, but some progress on a changing landscape. And by that, I mean for all the things that we've moved forward, the environment around us has changed such that we need to continue to do work. So as an example, I too started in the world of diversity and work when it was called cultural diversity. So again, it was narrowed down to just culture, not disability, not gender, and a lot of different other things that are part of the conversation now. So we need to continue to work to keep pace with the change in the environment. So, yes, there's been some change, but, yes, there's a lot more that still needs to be had. So, as an example, one of the topics that we'll have at our upcoming conference, I'll talk about that, is generations in the workplace. So all of the different folks that are in the workplace that have different backgrounds and different exposures creates another opportunity for conversation about how we work and play well together.
Dan.
I agree with Patsy and Giselle. I think the landscape of the workplaces has changed over the years, and it's not where it needs to be, but I think it's headed in the right direction.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about diversity in the workplace here on No Limits today. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. So, Giselle, let's talk about some of the places then that we have made gains, where specifically we can see measurable differences from where we were, say, a couple of decades ago.
Well, I think we've made some gains in the area of representation. So as an example, Patsy mentioned some things in terms of women in the workplace and that sort of thing. But one of the comments that is often made regarding diversity is that step to inclusion. So diversity is being invited to the party. Inclusion is being asked to dance. So we've made some strides in terms of being at the party for all the groups that we're talking about here, but to be truly participative and involved in the inner workings of the organization, profit conversations, and other kind of things is where we still need to continue to move forward.
Dan, what areas do you think we've made gains?
Well, certainly in the area of hiring people with disabilities. I know that a lot more people with disabilities are entering into the workforce and have been recognized for their abilities versus their disabilities.
Patsy, what areas do you see that we've made gains?
Well, taking a sort of a step back here a little bit in terms of workplaces and enlightened self-interest of employers, in general, there seems to be a movement in larger corporations to recognize the value of their employees, period, and to begin to look at being respectful of their employees and their ideas and enlightened self-interest. If you have a happy employee, they'll work harder for you. And then a workplace like this that's positive is much better at involving employees with diverse backgrounds and ideas, and then functioning as a really productive unit. So the research on how a corporation treats its employees is beginning to look at how employees function and give back to the employer, if that makes sense. So if it's a matter of if your employer treats you well and presents a new idea, you can feel comfortable in working through that and working with other employees. So this is beginning to happen in some of the larger corporations in terms of shared time in terms of vacation time, in terms of casual days. But then it really has much bigger implications in terms of people being willing to engage themselves more broadly, and that includes with people who are different.
Go ahead, Zell.
So you make a good point on, in terms of, you use the phrase, if employer treats you well. So to me, that kind of speaks to acceptance and back to the term of inclusion. So mm-hmm. not just we've hired you, so you're here, be thankful, but rather we value your difference and we welcome the contribution that you can make. So I think that's when you really feel like you're part of the organization, when your ideas are listened to and your contribution is valued and respected. And I think that's where we need to continue to drive towards.
What, you know, as we're talking, and I'm going to say this subject for whatever reason often seems to really bring strong feelings to the surface with folks. And we're talking about it here in very polite and civil terms, which is what we do on this show. But I think we'd be remiss in exploring the subject if we didn't talk about where the resistance comes. I mean, I'm remembering Patsy's mentioned a couple of times that litigation had to take place. One of those places, I was a guest of someone at the Century Club Associate, really it's the Century Association in New York, some years ago, and it was one of the first clubs in which there was a suit so that female members could be included because business was being discussed there. And as I had a lunch meeting there, and I looked, and there was this very old guy walking around the room with a sheet of paper, and he was tallying something. And I asked what he was doing. Said he was keeping track of all the women who were there. He was counting them, even though this litigation was at least 10 years in the past at that point, that the issue had been settled, but apparently he did that every day. His feelings were so strong about that he wanted to let that be known. So, you know, and we've seen other manifestations of that kind of resistance. What is it about the idea of diversity that either angers or frightens people so much? Giselle, I'll start with you on that one.
Well, I think in the end, we still have our own cultures and biases that are inbred. So one of the topics that we talk about a lot is unconscious bias. So many times what we think doesn't bothers us more than we would admit. So part of it has to do that we all come from different places, different backgrounds, different experiences. And when you bring those together, you can't just check those at the door. So who I am when I get here is who I behave like once I get inside.
Patsy, your thoughts?
Well, I've just been reading a book by Eileen Weiss called The Woman's Hour. And it's about women getting the vote in 1920, which is just about 100 years ago. The thing is that there was huge fear this would be a change, and people were uncomfortable and they didn't know how it would play out. And the newspaper articles and the billboards and the radio shows were talking about the moral breakdown of America. The families would fall. No one would be home to take care of children. And there was really quite a lot of alarm. And it's because people had a lot of trouble seeing how anything might go smoothly. And people become frantic about which bathroom might be available to employees. How will this change my life? If two men are married, will that ruin mine? Not really. Not at all. My husband might drive me nuts himself. Mm-hmm. But not somebody else being married. So I think we are concerned. What will happen to me if this change happens?
Dan?
I think some of the resistance comes from bias and maybe stereotype, and then really just the unknown about what would happen if you hire someone coming in off the street and you don't know what to expect, in particular a person with a disability. You don't know their capabilities and whether it's going to be an added cost to the company or what have you.
Is that an argument you frequently encounter? Or is it one of those things that's under the surface? It's not the stated argument, but that's the real concern.
It's a little of both. I mean, sometimes it's overt. Sometimes employers are just adamant that providing accommodations is going to add to their bottom line. and it's going to be too costly for them to hire that person with a disability.
What do you say to them when that's the case?
Well, it's difficult because until you really get the person in there and know what their accommodations are going to be, it's hard to say whether there's going to be an added cost. Often it isn't an added cost. It's a benefit to the employer.
We got a lot to talk about. If you are just joining us, we're talking about diversity in the workplace. If you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Izelle Mars from the Diversity Roundtable, Patsy Hoyer from the League of Women Voters, and Dan Ward, Intake Coordinator for Indiana Disability Rights. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please, stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about diversity in the workplace. We're going to be talking about what's working and what's not here in Indianapolis and central Indiana. If you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Izelle Mars from the Diversity Roundtable, Patsy Hoyer from the League of Women Voters, and Dan Ward, Intake Coordinator for Indiana Disability Rights. So we've teased a little bit. Let's talk about what is working here in Indianapolis and central Indiana. What approaches seem to be bearing fruit, and a little bit about why we think they're working. I'll start with Izelle on that one.
Yeah, you know, right before we took a break, Dan made a great comment that focused on profitability. And at the end of the day, in spite of all the challenges, companies are interested in things that will help them grow and be profitable. So in many cases, even though we think there's challenges regarding implementation of certain programs or that sort of thing, to the extent that it helps the company, ultimately, it's a good thing. So there are various companies that have dedicated diversity professionals in their organization to track metrics around profitability and how it makes a difference in various parts of the organization in the country. So as an example, if you have a customer service facility in the Southwest, then maybe looking at the proper staffing for that area to relate to those clients will help your organization. So looking intentionally at your organization and determining what's important and measuring profitability and contribution is helping make a difference.
Patsy.
Well, I think that's a very impressive answer. And I do think enlightened self-interest plays a very large role in this. The other thing I think that is working is that employers are helping employees to understand that they are working as a team, and literally a team. And your job is to get this done, and you can't do your job unless somebody else does theirs. And that the ultimate outcome is what the whole team does. So in healthcare, we have physicians who do their thing, nurse practitioners. They can't function without nurses and medical assistants and people on the phone. Every one of these individuals helps to make the patient care high quality and a good experience for everybody. So if you have a nasty receptionist, it's not going to work. So everyone needs to be valued and respected and has a part to play. Employers are recognizing that and seeing that diversity, somebody different, isn't necessarily that much of an issue in the outcome.
Dan.
Well, I think what's working is we're seeing more people with disabilities in the workforce. Mm-hmm. In Indiana, there are 650,000 people between the ages of 21 and 64 that report having a disability. So that just increases the number of people that can work and contribute to employers and agencies across the state.
How much of this these gains do you think might be driven by the fact that, we keep coming back at some level to, either economic forces, enlightened self-interest or whatever. Economists around the world say that we're going to be looking at a worldwide labor shortage by the year 2030. that's going to be severe. So for a lot of these companies, I mean, this is the wrong kind of prejudice has become a luxury they can't afford anymore. If they're willing to, if they want to be competitive, how much of this is that there are these really pretty powerful market forces working against that kind of prejudice or bias? I'm thinking, for example, you know, a couple of years ago, when Indiana was dealing with proposed constitutional ban on same-sex marriage, or the fight over the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, a lot of businesses were the ones that were leading the charge, saying, no, don't go down that road. You're going to scare away a lot of qualified labor for us, and we don't want that to happen. I'm going to start with Dan on that.
I think I would defer to Izell or Patsy on Izell. This question.
Okay, I'll go to Izell.
Well, you know, we talked about it. Certainly when you start to talk about impact on business, at the end of the day, they're life is around the profitability, especially when you're talking about small businesses. Certainly a large company, you know, one of the many Eli Lilly or any one of the large ones in Indianapolis that, by the way, have dedicated diversity practitioners and professionals, you know, driving solutions. They have the ability to expand and contract based on some of these changes. But small business, which is, you know, the backbone of Central Indiana, America, whatever you want to say, doesn't have the ability to respond as quickly and bounce back from something that could be that detrimental. So I think it's a huge factor and very much something that impacts the way people are treated, accepted, and valued in the organizations.
Patsy?
Well, I think also that employers with enlightened self-interest get into this, but then, again, many of the reasons that the diversity was not embraced and people were just on their narrow courses was that it wasn't familiar. And they have this great inertia and habits and process and flows of communications. And, well, this is kind of how we always do it. I know how to set this up. These are who we interview. And these are my thoughts. And never really taking a second look at that. Now, once you begin to do that, and an employer begins to look around and say, well, who have we got here? What kinds of things do we need to get done? Where are we not the most successful? Then they start a little something going, and it's not so difficult. It's not so different. The different becomes more familiar. I don't know if anybody can. I guess I'm perhaps oversimplifying it, but just think of styles of dress. For a long time, men had really long hair. Now we've gotten used to buzz cuts, and now everybody can have any kind of hair. We're not shocked.
Or in some cases, no
hair. Or in some cases, no. So we're not shocked. We're not. Our codes of dress, both in the workplace and elsewhere, have significantly changed. So we are slowly just seeing that things can be different and that they can be okay. That's very helpful on the person-to-person, but also in the workplace. You know, cornrows used to be really interesting and maybe alarming, and only certain people wore them. Well, now in my healthcare facility, lots of people have cornrows. They still don't like you to have tattoos, but cornrows and whatever, that's all right.
Now, one of the things that touches on, and you mentioned it earlier, is you know, I'll call it layers of diversity. There are things that you can see and things that you can't see. So even if you can see cornrows, what you might not see is that I'm a single mother with three children, and I have to make certain changes in my life to be at work on time and do other things. So I think diversity, again, expands back to the impact on the workplace. It's not just what you can see, that we're different physically, but also the other things that we bring to the work environment that are part of our life.
Does the term itself, diversity, at times add to the difficulty in having this discussion? Because I remember in that first diversity training session I went through years ago, you know, I finally looked at the facilitator and said, you know, why aren't we just calling this decency training instead? Because a lot of the things that we seem to be talking about here is that you're supposed to treat everyone with a modicum of consideration, with respect. This boils down to what used to, at one time, would have been considered simply good manners, and now instead is a kind of complicated process. That idea, I wonder at times if by calling it diversity, we haven't, handed critics a club to beat advocates for inclusion with. Dan?
I think you make a good point. Diversity could have a negative connotation to start off on the wrong foot, definitely.
Giselle?
Yeah, I think that it also, we talk about those of us have been in the workplace for a while. I mean, it even harkens back to before diversity was really out there, there was affirmative action. So affirmative action kind of reeks of we have to do this because, and you're here because, and other kinds of things. So intentional inclusion is different from affirmative action in a way, this is why you're here, only because we need this number kind of thing. So I certainly agree with your point, the possibility that somehow when you put all that together, that impact could bring some thought that, yeah, we're really doing this for the right reasons.
Well, and there are similar misunderstandings also about affirmative action and diverse. I mean, affirmative action, most people, at least critics, like to present that as a quota system, that basically you're looking for ways to check the box. The courts have ruled pretty consistently that's not what it's supposed to be, that in fact it's supposed to be a process that speaks more to inclusion and, how you go out and look for candidates and making sure that there are no barriers to the kind of inclusion that you're talking about. It's all about the outreach rather than the outcome. And, it seems often that this discussion about diversity also operates. What are some of the significant misunderstandings when we're talking about diversity that people have? Patsy, I'll start with you.
Well, I think I'm not sure how old you are, John, but
I'm not supposed to tell.
I'm not going to tell how old I am, but old enough to remember when EEOC got started. I think that the concern a lot of people had was, and even now, if we're making accommodations, we have to get around the idea that people are, is this fair? Are they getting more than I'm getting? I don't know if that's right. So there are a lot of nuances to this in terms of unfamiliarity, and is it fair, and is how's it going to affect me? So I think we have to think about that. The League of Women Voters has now instituting institutionally and on a one-to-one basis with some, I don't know what we're going to call it. I like the idea of decency training, the idea of diversity, equity, and inclusion, because we feel, branching out from the workplace, that this is really important in terms of making democracy work. Democracy is not a spectator sport. So we need people who will participate. And if we can do that outside of the workplace and person to person and include everyone in the great democracy, these things can better happen in the workplace and be part of the laws we write and pass in Indianapolis. So I like the idea of just calling it decency training. So many of the things that happened, I believe, looking back with both horror, chagrin, and a certain amount of humor, the whole bathroom conversation and controversy that did go to court could have probably been solved if people had just tried to sit down and think about what would be kind and how could we kind of discuss this. And people did have fears and concerns. So how can we address them? And what about the person involved? Could we be kind? I think that's a great idea.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about diversity in the workplace, what's working, what's not, here in Indianapolis and central Indiana. If you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. So how much of this is also, and we've kind of circled around this, but I want to explore this point a bit, is that people see so much of this as a zero-sum game. You know, if someone else succeeds, it means I must fail. If someone else wins, it means I must lose. If someone else gets something, it means something has been taken away from me. When, you know, to some degree, at least most advocates for diversity would argue that you're expanding the whole here. So, you know, ultimately, over the long haul, almost everyone gets more of something. Dan?
Well, that's the misunderstanding. When you're talking diversity and you bring other people into the workforce, the idea is that somebody is getting ahead while someone's lagging behind or going without.
Ezel.
Well, I would agree with that, but I think at the end of the day, it sounds kind of pie in the sky. We have to view it as if one wins, we all win. We win together or we lose together. And it has a broader impact. It's just not me and my work environment. It's my family, my kids, my grand. You know, it's a broader impact than just that singular kind of one person gets ahead kind of thing. But I do understand your point.
Well, it's not necessarily my point. It's the argument I often hear. Okay. Yeah, Patsy.
Well, one of the things in the League of Women Voters National Conference that we just had, and I think this is somehow applicable here, is that when people are negative about diversity or have questions or are fearful, the first thing we should try to do is to listen. And that's hard for somebody like me because I'm very chatty. You probably noticed. But that you should listen to see what are your concerns are, and perhaps we can address them. And we need to do that both as institutions and individuals, to listen first.
And just on that, I think that we still have a pretty big challenge regarding awareness. Mm-hmm. I work with Martin University, which mm-hmm. is a predominantly black institution mm-hmm. here in Indianapolis. And often we have college tours and we bring young people in, high school age and young people, and have a bit of an exercise to start the icebreaker, if you will, to say, you know, what do you know about this group or that group or just various conversations like that? And it's amazing that young people, still driven by media or those personal mm-hmm. experiences they have some pretty stereotypical kind of views about groups, about ethnicities, about disability, about other kinds of things. So I think that starts us on a conversation path about things that we can talk about in a broader sense. But also I think that with media and other kinds of things, the conversation needs to start sooner. Diversity awareness and inclusion awareness need to start sooner in order for us to truly embrace it.
What are the biggest misperceptions that come out of those conversations?
You know, it's something as simple as things about Asians or things about Hispanics or things about black men or white, just any of those general kinds of things that, again, are born of just people's personal experience and their exposure. And I believe, I don't have any facts to support this, that a lot of what happens in media, what we watch on TV, what we listen to, what we interface with in our day-to-day lives drives some of those thoughts.
Do we see any signs that this is, I mean, I'm thinking my children, you know, now have a much more diverse and inclusive set of friends than certainly I did when I was growing up. And I don't think they're really the exception. I mean, obviously, each one of their friends also is operating at that level. Are we seeing progress at that level, do we think? Are some of those questions getting easier? So I'm going to throw it first to Ezel because we've only got about 30 seconds.
Yeah, so. I believe that we are. I mean, and you're spot on. I think that, you know, my children, my grandchildren live in a world or an education environment that's more diverse than mine was when I went to school, you know, high school and even college. So I think that makes a difference. We are seeing some progress. I think the fact that we're talking about it mm-hmm. openly and consistently says that we're making progress.
We got to take a break. We're talking about diversity in the workplace. Here on No Limits, my guests are Ezel Mars from the Diversity Roundtable, Patsy Hoyer from the League of Women Voters, and Dan Ward, Intake Coordinator for Indiana Disability Rights. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please Stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about diversity in the workplace, about what's working and what isn't here in Indianapolis and central Indiana. My guests are Ezell Mars from the Diversity Roundtable, Patsy Hoyer from the League of Women Voters, and Dan Ward, intake coordinator for Indiana Disability Rights. Patsy, before we ran into the break, you had something you wanted to add.
Well, actually, I kind of have two things. We were talking a little bit about friends and more diverse friends that our children had. And last Friday, after having dated a gentleman for a number of months, our daughter, who's a bit older, and Irshad Altayeb decided to get married. Mm-hmm. So they did. And it was a joyous occasion, and family and some friends attended. However, it turned out that a number of friends were shocked and didn't feel that they really could attend this little ceremony. So I was really quite taken aback that this group of young people were making assumptions about Irshad, who is much more of a cultural than religious Muslim, and is a Jordanian. So that was a very personal, upfront, and in-your-face experience. And given the country's leadership and approach toward individuals from Muslim countries, I do think that this is somewhat disconcerting. And I guess I have one other thing that I'd like to say publicly. It's that kind of calling names is very inappropriate. I actually am documented a direct descendant of Pocahontas, which is, for whatever that's worth, it would have been glorious when I was 13. At my age, it's just kind of interesting. So I really resent the fact that public figures can derogatorily say, oh, Pocahontas. So just the role modeling there is very disconcerting to me.
We are talking about diversity here on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. You can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Or you can do what a listener named Ben has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Ben, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello. What's on your mind?
So I kind of had a two-part question, I guess. I was just curious. So since the Supreme Court basically said that corporations are now people and people have beliefs generally, and so if you kind of look at a corporation as being a person when you're dealing with them, i.e. through the CEO or what have you, are you finding that there's issues that you're having problems with dealing with maybe some corporations because of maybe the head, because they're a person now? And I guess the second part would be, you know, private companies versus public companies. Are you finding that there are issues there where, as you spoke earlier, when the RFRA was going through and companies say, don't do that, where a big company, a public company would say, don't do that because they're more worried about profits, where a private company who just has maybe a CEO or something, they might say, well, you know, I believe this, even if we're going to lose money, I'm still just going to do what I believe rather than worry about the money.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Ben. Ezell.
Well, I think there's always going to be some difference between private and public companies. Again, as I've said, I think at the end of the day, all companies are driven by a profit motive. So companies are going to do what's in the best interest of their customers, their board, their profitability. I think that private companies can do things a little differently. I can think of a couple of companies I know that are not open on Sundays, pretty big companies that you know of. that's their choice, and they can do that because they don't want to. And you can, you know, vote with your feet, is I think what they would say. And a couple of them, again, come to mind. And on the other 6 days a week, I'm happy to shop there, but that's their choice.
Patsy, on that issue, because he was touching really on a couple of the Hobby Lobby decision and to some degree the Citizens United, which, you know, have argued that LLCs have many of the same constitutional rights that human beings do now.
Well, I honestly am not enough of a legal scholar to really weigh in on that other than what I read in the newspaper. And the League of Women Voters does not have a position on this in terms of who's who or what's what. But that's to make a corporation a person in order to give money to political campaigns falls under some of our concerns about campaign finance and what's up and up and where the money goes and where it comes from. So I'm not. I do agree private corporations can do things much more nimbly that they like on their based on their beliefs. But other corporations do things that they believe as well. And in terms of diversity and social action and commitment to communities. And so we must applaud that. We tend to look at the private things that are sort of seem less But public corporations can be very committed.
We're talking about diversity in the workplace here on No Limits. Dee, you're on the air. Dee?
Dan. And Dan, what programs are available now through Indiana Disability Rights that an individual could take advantage of if they felt they were experiencing discrimination in the workplace in any way, shape, or form? Thank you. I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks very much for the call, Dee.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we have five teams, if you will: abuse and neglect, justice, community integration, education, and employment. So we can provide advocacy services to people with disabilities if they're experiencing abuse or neglect or discrimination in any one of those teams.
How many of those cases do you see, Deanna, in the course of a year, would you say?
Hundreds.
Hundreds?
Yes, absolutely. I don't have the exact numbers, but
What are the most frequent kinds of abuse?
Well, I would say probably abuse and neglect in institutional settings would be the majority of our cases. But across the board, we get cases in each program pretty consistently.
Are there still instances of, people, in this day and age where people said, well, you know, I'd like to hire you, but I'm not going to do it because you have a disability. I mean, do you still see that kind of sort of naked opposition to?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I get calls from people, I'm not going to say on a daily basis, but I get calls from people telling me that they were told they're not being hired because they have a disability.
And what do you say to the employers in those situations?
Well, it's a process that's involved. We take a look at all the facts that are involved. If we open a case for an individual, we do some investigating or some advocacy to determine what went on and see if we can overcome that obstacle for that individual.
Go ahead.
I think that plays out in other environments as well, because often it's not as overt as because you have a disability, but rather somehow veiled in not sure you can do the job. You know, it's going to require you to be standing on your feet for a long period of time, or this is going to require you to have some other kind of lifting or other requirement that I'm not sure you can do. So, again, it still gets down to the root of the same problem, but sometimes in a more veiled way.
I've gotten an anonymous email that's on point. And again, if you want to join this conversation via email, you can send your email to nolimits@wfyi.org. This listener writes, I have had several experiences with the lack of inclusion and diversity in the workplace. As a woman with invisible disabilities, I worked for a large hospital system and was targeted and let go as a result of wanting to rid themselves of so-called troublemakers. Would the panel have any advice on how to proceed? It is affecting me several years later. I'll start with Dan on that one.
Well, if it's been several years ago, I don't know that there's necessarily a whole lot that can be done now in terms of going at the employer. But I'm really lost on the question a little bit.
Well, I think what she's saying is that, you know, in some cases there are disabilities that are visible, but there are others that are not, that people might not be aware of. Probably ought to walk people through. I mean, you know, at what point do you have a responsibility or duty to disclose that you have a disability? And then what responsibilities do employers have to make accommodations for those disabilities?
Well, I think you should disclose your disability if you feel like in some way you're going to need accommodations. And then once you make that known to your employer, then it's their responsibility to provide those accommodations to you.
And is that written into law or?
Well, the Americans with Disabilities Act enumerates these facts.
Okay. And how of the your organization, I mean, how many of those advocacy steps do you have to take?
Well, we get contacted by people with employment issues literally on a daily basis, and we're opening cases weekly for these individuals to provide advocacy services for them.
What's the most common form of discrimination against people with disabilities, would you say?
Overall or in the employment arena?
In the, well, we're talking really about the workplace. So
yeah.
Let's start with employment, but then we can talk about the broader side.
I think it boils down to probably accommodations in the workplace predominantly. I think that's what I see the most coming into our office. But it's not just focused on accommodations. It can be like this lady in the email said that, you know, she had an invisible disability and they were just trying to get rid of troublemakers. There's a perspective that evidently in her case that she was a troublemaker for some reason.
And then you alluded to overall, outside of the workplace, what's the biggest source of discrimination?
We see a lot of abuse and neglect cases, definitely.
Where people are trying to take advantage of people who are disabled.
Absolutely, or physically abusing people with disabilities.
That's got to be hard to deal with. It's got to be wearing emotionally for those of you who have to work with that.
I'm sure it is. It is for me. And what's rewarding is when we can take steps to overcome it and eliminate it for that individual.
We're talking about diversity in the workplace here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Guy has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Guy, you're on the air.
Thanks.
Certainly.
This question of diversity in the workplace is, as you know, very sensitive one. It's been about 50-some years since the federal government kind of stepped in terms of the corporations and companies and so forth that they basically dealt with in terms of trying to improve the diversity of the workplace. I'd like your guests, I don't know if they were around back then, but if they've seen significant progress in that 50 years or so, that would have made that effort worthwhile.
Thanks very much for the call and the question. Gisella, you wanting to leap in, but I want to hear everyone's thoughts on this.
Yeah, I'm smiling because I wasn't quite around 50 years or so ago, but I've been around long enough to say I think there has been some progress. As I said earlier, I think it's the combination of some legal pressure with some profit motivation to say not only is there some legal requirements, but there's some other things that you have to do as a company if you want to be successful. So, as I said, I think there has been some. I still think there's a lot we need to improve on, a lot we need to still continue to work on.
Patsy.
I would absolutely agree. Things are very different. And I think you, Zell, mentioned that the landscape around us has also changed. The world is different and our communications are faster, lots of things. So all of those things have changed and made a difference. May I say something to the lady who
Certainly.
Still is having affected some years ago from this? I really hope that she would look to find someone that she could share this with, talk to, whether it's people with disabilities, the YWCA, or wherever. I'm really concerned that someone is still suffering so many years later for what happened there. I don't know any of the circumstances, of course, but this is not what we want to have happen.
Well, I want to get Dan's thoughts, but I think that's sort of a good final thing for us to talk about, is that the effects of this kind of discrimination, of not being included, being told you don't belong, can linger long afterwards. But progress over 50 years, and then we're going to move on to Patsy's point.
Well, I mentioned the Americans with Disabilities Act, and it was passed in 1991. I think we've made great strides in terms of inclusiveness for people with disabilities as a result. I don't think we're where we need to be yet, obviously, but it's helped.
So let's talk about the cost of this kind of discrimination. I mean, we've got an example from this listener who's saying several years after the fact, it still bothers her. It takes a toll on her sense of self and all of that. Are there other costs that people bear? Dan, I'll give you the first word on it.
Well, just the stigma of being unemployed, I think, takes a great toll on an individual. I mean, we value ourselves by what we do a lot of times, and being unemployed is a big part of it.
Yeah. Patsy, I'll go with Patsy and give Giselle the last word. Patsy?
Well, I agree. And stigma is a very good word to use here. I do think that it's imperative to find people who are like you, I guess, to share this with, and also people who are not, because I think there are many of us who certainly have blind spots, but who do want things to be fair and who do want to be inclusive and not allow these things to happen.
So.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, again, to the caller, maybe when you mentioned being labeled a troublemaker or something like that, maybe it's just someone that's outspoken and wants to speak their piece firmly, and therein lies the final problem. We talk about diversity in the workplace. If we're accepted for our differences and valued and willing and able to share our opinion, then that represents inclusion at a point that makes a difference and moves us forward. But if I'm a troublemaker because I want to speak my mind, then maybe I'm not in an inclusive work environment.
And that probably will have to be the last word here on this subject, at least for this hour. We're still getting tweets and all of that coming in, so I suspect it's not going to be the last time that we will discuss this subject on No Limits. The show is, after all, supposed to be an ongoing community conversation, and, you know, as such, never ends. So I'm hoping we will talk about this again. I'd like to thank my guests, Dan Ward, Giselle Mars, and Patsy Hoyer, for what has been a lively and provocative conversation about diversity in the workplace. Also like to thank our listeners, as always, and invite everyone to come back on Thursday. I am John Krall. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producers, Sarah Neal Estes, Roxana Caldwell, and Jill Sheridan. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. Emily Matheny screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.